Hey, everybody. This is Virginia, and you are listening to Super Hungry Conversations with Not-So-Starving Artists. I am really excited to be back with you guys. I have traded the illustriousness of my walk-in closet recording space to the spaciousness of a downstairs basement area recording space. So if I sound, spacious, it's because I'm currently doing like windmill type motion with my arms because I can do all sorts of cartwheels in this ish. Really excited about this episode. Lots of things have been going on since I last talked to you when we heard from Stan Zimmerman, and things have been going amazing, really, really busy. Proud to say that I just opened my own film studio with a few partners, and I'm really thrilled. We are full speed ahead with things. We signed the LLC paperwork last week. We're having our official launch party on February 1st, and I'm very thrilled to be coming to you guys with the news about Snowball Studios. We are doing some big things in 2017, so I'm really excited, and you guys will always be, you know, some of the first to hear about it. One of the things that I'm really excited about, I think it's very honest to say that I've genuinely loved every single podcast episode and interview that I've done. I always feel like I really connect with, you know, the guest. I feel like I always learn something from them, and I always feel like that actually really genuinely translates when we're having these conversations. And this episode is actually something really special. I got to interview a really talented young actor by the name of Sir Darius Blaine. And you might recognize his name. You definitely would recognize his face from things like Star Trek Into Darkness. And he was in When the Game Stands Tall. He was in the Footloose remake. He can be seen now in the new Jumanji sequel as well, which is going to be, he's opposite Dwayne The Rock, my future husband Johnson, Kevin Hart, and Jack Black. So it's pretty incredible. And the kicker of all of it is that we actually went to high school together. We both went to a very small school in Brevard County, Florida. And my graduating class was like 27 people. He was 2 years above me. And I think his probably was maybe only a handful more. So we went to a very, very small little Baptist school. And I'm just so thrilled to see sort of the trajectory of how his career has taken him. You know, he kind of studied in New York and then moved out to LA, and, you know, Footloose was his very first ever film audition, and he nailed it. And so we talk about his ups, we talk about the downs, you know, what it's like to be a series regular and still waiting tables in New York, you know, working three jobs to put himself through acting school and help his mom at the same time. I think one of the joys about this show is really unearthing everybody's individual story and to catch up with him in such a genuine way, but then also to sort of, as a fan, you know, as somebody who is, you know, proud to see what he's doing and all of the roles that he's booking. It was great to sort of hear his process and how he, you know, stays strong when there are months of not a lot of work, or, you know, not a lot of callbacks or auditions that go poorly. You know, like, he has really found a true inner strength and peace, and his humility is still something that, you know, even back in the day when we were in high school, I could never really say that we were like best friends or anything, but we definitely were acquaintances and knew each other. And, you know, I was very kind of nerdy and not the most popular person in high school. Not unpopular, but I think probably just a little too goody-goody for my own good. And, you know, he was a athlete, and I always appreciated that, you know, whenever we did have class together, he always did talk to me and say hi. And, you know, it was nice because that's not always the case, I think. And so to see him genuinely do well and to remember him as someone who was always very nice and humble, only good things I wish for him, and only bright and huge things do I see for his future. This episode of Super Hungry the Podcast is brought to you by Geek World Order, the go-to site for anything geek and nerdy, video games, movies, music, anything that's geek-related. Geek World Order has got you covered. So you can check them out on Facebook by searching Geek World Order, or you can go to geekworldordersite.com. Geek World Order, where geeks unite. This episode of Super Hungry the Podcast is also brought to you by our returning sponsor, ZL and Liz LuLaRoe. If you've ever seen any of my real cute photos and real cute dresses and real cute leggings, that all comes from my lovely sponsor, Liz Cones. You can find her on Facebook at LuLaRoe, ZL and Liz. And if you give them a special promo code of Jackson when you get your first order, you will get a special discount. That's Jackson, JACKSON, and it's LuLaRoe, ZL, and Liz. I'm really excited for you guys to hear this conversation with Sir Darius Moore.
I feel like I need, hey, I'm about to record my album right now. Let's go.
It's good levels, right? It's good.
Do.
Are you really working on an EP, though?
No, I really am. I really am.
That's cool. Hang on, I'm gonna scoot back a little bit. We're already starting to record, so don't worry.
Oh, God.
I do a separate intro.
Oh, okay.
So it's all edited and nice and everything. But thank you for braving the Los Angeles traffic midday after a flight to come to the closet. I want everybody to know you drove from LAX to Sherman Oaks, and Angelinos know that's a nightmare. So thanks for coming.
Takes love and dedication. You got to be important for that. I mean, you and I go way back, so of course. I would climb mountains or drive over
there. Literal, actual mountains. Well, I was telling people about it, and I was like, you know, we haven't seen each other in like 10 years. I haven't seen you since you graduated high school.
12, but yes.
Oh, wow, 12 years. Jesus, yeah, because you were...
I think I just dated both of us, but that's okay.
That's on your body. We're infinity, so we're never going to die. Yep. We go way back to high school days. We went to a really, really small Baptist high school in Melbourne, Florida, Brevard County, Florida.
Shout out to 3-2-1. Let's go.
Ha! Hey, everybody, Countdown County. Do you remember when people started saying that?
I used to get God, so annoyed by it.
I was like, that's so lame. But, Countdown County,
Gunshine State.
Oh,
God.
Gunshine State is so God. Right now, too.
Because Florida is shaped like a gun. Well, oh, my God.
Also, how many guns my grandfather has. Or, you know, the amount of people that were hunting down there.
Gotta love them red states.
I don't know. I liked growing up there, but I think you and I probably have a similar experience where, like, it was good, and then we were in a way that it let us know we didn't want to stay there.
Right.
You know?
I mean, it was a great... It's a great place still to this day to raise family, raise children.
Decent schools.
Pretty much, and stuff. Yeah, good schools.
Good jobs and stuff.
Intellect is encouraged. Manners are still encouraged. So it's like a lot of strong foundational principles.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's a good place to, like I said, establish your foundation. But from there, you kind of want to branch out and see the rest of the world. You know, when I first moved to New York City after my second year at Brevard Community College, I moved up to New York, and it was
Eastern Florida State College now. It's like they're like 4-year universities. They upped it. My favorite was all my friends who have their AAs, quickly turned it from a BCC on Facebook to like Eastern Florida State College.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was like, upgraded, guys. All right,
Eastern Florida State College. But yeah, but moving up to New York was kind of a culture shock because living in Brevard County, you're not exposed to too much culturally. And that's not a knock on them. It's just, you know, what's available. But the foundational principles that I learned, you know, growing up in that kind of community, that kind of close-knit community where everybody knows everybody, those foundational principles kind of helped me navigate the world where I've lived in, you know, New York, Los Angeles, Atlanta, back to Los Angeles. And I haven't felt out of place anywhere because... Again, that moral code has stayed within me. So, you know, there's always pluses and minuses growing up in small towns. You know, I never felt like I necessarily fit in, maybe, because you're always kind of, you've got loftier dreams, maybe. But the people there are some of the greatest people I've ever known in my life. I'm still very close in contact with, you know.
Yeah.
Try to make it back at least every year just to show face and hang out with my day ones, you know.
Yeah. Do you think that, because when we were in high school together, I was trying to think back, and you were like a year ahead of me, I think, or 2 years maybe. And I feel like we had like one or two classes together because our school was so small. But really, like, you were very like into sports in high school. And I actually was kind of blown away when I was seeing a
a few years later that you were just killing it with the acting game, because I really didn't know in high school that that was something that you were even interested in.
That makes two of us.
I was going to say, so when did that happen for you? Because, like, I mean, ideally, walk me back, because you were born in Brevard County?
No, I was born in Miami.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I was born in Miami originally, and then my mom went to... moved us to Tulsa, Oklahoma to get her master's degree at 42.
That's and awesome, by the
way. Yeah, yeah. So we lived in Tulsa, Oklahoma for 3 years. And then from there, we moved to Bridgeport, Connecticut for 1 year. I hated it and begged her to leave like every day. So we finally moved back to Florida when I got to seventh grade.
Why did you hate Bridgeport so much?
The culture, it just wasn't for me.
Okay.
I was made fun of every day for, I guess, my economic status, we'll say. You know?
That was the cool
kids
thing
can
about
be mean,
Brevard.
But it's fine.
Everybody
it's
fine. Was broke in Brevard. So nobody's trying
no
to
comment.
Too much. Like,
no comment. Yeah.
Did you feel like when you settled back into Florida in that mm-hmm. seventh grade time that was really when you felt like, okay, I found friends and sort of.
Yeah. So it was like, I went from Miami, where like at that school, the school, elementary school and stuff that I went to, I had a lot of friends and family. And so I was, you know, it is like socially, there's like the different pods. So I was like well known. I won't use the word popular, but like right. well known, well liked. And then I moved to Oklahoma, where I was like one of three black kids in a 5,000 person school. It was literally 5,000 people at the school.
Wow.
I was like one of six, actually. There were six of us, I remember, but they were in like higher grades. So I go into obscurity, and then you go to, you know, Connecticut, and you know, they make fun of you for, you know, not having the this and the that and the other or whatever. And
yeah.
I think it was just kids being kids, but you know, I took it personally. Anyway, it wasn't what I was used to. I was ready to go back home, so we moved back to Florida. Felt like I was like back in my zone, kind of. And I had a lot of fun, like middle school, and that was the first time I ever acted. I helped my mom write a play, and
cool.
I ended up. Well, it was a take on Cinderella, kind
okay.
of, but it was from a male perspective.
Interesting.
It was called Cinderfella 2000. turn of the century.
Looking at her like she's gonna be laughing at you too.
I know. But
it's actually
yeah,
kind of cool. So did it
yeah.
have music, or was it just a straight play?
Yeah, no, it was music too. It
and
was
you
dope.
You guys wrote the music together?
No, I didn't. We didn't write the music
oh, okay.
together. We had songs that were already written and stuff. But okay. Anyway, that was the first time I got bit by the acting bug. Jumped on that stage at 13 years old. Never had once been like an outgoing person. I was extremely shy, like to mm-hmm. the point where like if I was in a room with more than three people, like my armpits were itching and I was shaking and
yeah.
you know. So. Superstar.
Mary Catherine.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I was like, this is awesome. This is great. My nerves all went away as soon as that curtain opened the first time, and I looked out to this sea of like 300 people, and I was like, oh my God. And I just jumped right in. And
do you remember your first like laugh or crowd reaction? Do you remember that?
Yeah, I was the evil stepbrother. and I remember... There's a part in play where, okay, so you know the regular Cinderella, like
yeah.
the stepsisters are trying to get the prince's attention, and they're doing all kinds of zany stuff to get his attention. And there was one part where, you know, me as the stepbrother, I was trying to get the princess's attention, and it wasn't a princess, she was the president's daughter.
Okay.
It was this, so that was like kind of the turn. No rocket science here at all, but... trying to get her attention, and I started dancing for her, popping and locking, and
yeah.
the whole auditorium erupted. It was really fun. It was really freeing, and from that moment on, it was kind of planted inside of me. And I always did like community theater
yeah.
Throughout high school and even into college.
I didn't know that. Did you do that
Melbourne,
during BCC?
Melbourne Community Theater. I did a play at the King Center too while I was there.
Wow.
I know. I don't know how it happened.
I had like no idea though.
Yeah, but I mean, I was playing basketball. I worked a full time job and somehow squeezed acting in there on the side. But I never took it seriously. I never thought I could actually like make a living out of it or a career. So, I always just wanted to be a doctor.
Well, again, and not to in any way like crap on where we're from, but where we're from, it's such an industry town in terms of like manufacturing, space, you know, Harris and all of those things. It's exactly. So it's like, if you're not going to go into the medical field, it's almost expected that, you know, maybe you would do something like that. Cause even
some sort of trade.
Or yeah. Something. Even for me, like my grandfather owned a machine shop for a really long time. And, you know, he sold it when I was in college, but it was a thing where, you know, that I think was a conversation we had to have when I was like in high school, where I was like, by the way, I don't really want to take over the shop. Like, you know, and that's sort of, because there's a weird expectation. And I even think about it, because when I think about our school, it was so small that we didn't, it was not like we had a theater class. It's not like we had like music class. You know, we really didn't have.
Well, I went to, you know, I went to the big school for my first 3 years. So I went to Palm Bay High for the first 3 years. And we did have all those programs, but I never involved myself in it because, again, you know, I'm coming from a Caribbean household. Well, half of it. My mom is American. My dad is Caribbean, and his family, they all expect you to come over here and do something productive, of course. You know, they're from Haiti. And so the mindset is always make sure you have your life kind of mapped out, planned out. Know exactly what you want to do and execute it. But it's generally more geared towards like, okay, be a doctor, be a lawyer, be a this, be a that. And not that they ever tried to force me to do anything. It's not like that at all. But those are the things. They're like, look, you are a smart person. If you're intelligent, apply that intellect towards something that is going to be gainful for you and your family for the rest of your life.
Right.
Not jump off the damn ledge and become an actor. Right. Like, that's crazy.
Right.
So, you know, when I made that decision after my second year in college where, you know, I was about to go to University of Miami and, you know, be a bio major and, you know, continue to down that path of becoming a cardiologist one day, you know, because it sounded so wonderful. I made the decision after my second year in college that I was going to pursue acting because I got an opportunity to go to AMTC, which was an acting modeling talent competition at Disney. And I went and racked up all these accolades, awards, and offers to move here, to move there, get with this agent, that agent, manager, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, ultimately, I decided to go to the New York Conservatory for Dramatic Arts. And it was a literal spur of the moment decision. Like, I went to the competition in January, and by March, I was packing my bags to move up to New York City. And
what was that decision process like, though? Because I think for so many of us, like when I moved out, I kind of had this idea of, like, I'm going to go to L.A., and then I'm going to figure it out. But it almost feels like it was, like, backwards for you. It was like you figured out, oh, I'm going to try the acting thing. And then, so what was it that made you decide New York? Like, what was it in that decision?
I have to give credit to my first manager, Deborah Lynn Finden at Discover Management. I met her at AMTC. And I had been, again, I was being pulled by Chicago, New York, L.A., even Atlanta, which at the time was, like, really starting to grow entertainment-wise, and you see where it is now. I had been pulled by different managers and agents and reps from all those places, but I got a scholarship to the New York Conservatory for Dramatic Arts, so I was like, okay, do I want to go to school, or do I want to go to, you know, get started working with these people? And so I sat down and had a conversation with her. And everybody else was kind of selling me on, hey, look, come now. We'll do this for you. We'll do that, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
She put no pressure on me at all. She said, look, you got to decide if you want to have a career for now or forever. And she's like, L.A. is not going anywhere. She lived in L.A.
And yeah.
Her office is in L.A. And she was like, you know, decide if you're going to have, you know, a moment or a lifetime. You know what I mean? And she said, that's... New York City is going to provide you with an opportunity to really hone your craft, learn what you're doing, and be able to apply it for years. She said, LA's not going anywhere. And when you're ready to come to LA,
that's
let
amazing,
me know.
Actually.
And so I kept in contact with her for 3.5 years, and she kept her word, and I came out to LA. The first time I ever visited, I set up a meeting with her. She said, all right, cool, I'll sign you if you move here. And I said, if? I said, I'm moving here in 2 months. She said, all right, let me know when you're here. I moved in 6 weeks, and we got started right then. And you know, the rest is history. Booked my first ever movie audition with her.
Wow.
Which was Footloose back in 2010.
That was your first movie audition?
That was my first movie audition.
Sorry, I didn't mean to just yell at you, but that's upsetting to people.
Oh, no. Oh, don't worry. I paid my dues because months and months of no jobs and not booking anything at all. But that was what the process was like. You know, she encouraged me to get my education in it. And I encourage people all the time. Look, if you're a dancer, you're an actor, you're a model, you're a singer, you're a lawyer, it doesn't matter what you do. Whatever it is, hone that craft. Mm-hmm. So that you will have an opportunity to feed yourself, provide yourself for yourself and your family for a lifetime, rather than just being, you know, a flash in the pan.
Yeah.
So many people that think they can just jump up and do this. Yeah, you might, you're a good looking guy or girl, or you can sing, or you have some sort of talent or something. You might get something here and there,
yeah.
But it's not going to be lasting. You have to learn how to, again, it's all about foundation and legacy, right?
Yeah.
So create a foundation that's going to be able to withstand the test of time. That's what
it
is.
So when you were in New York, did you have to, because you had a scholarship for school, but did you have to work at the same time, or were you just in school full time?
Jesus, I'm about to pick up the tambourine. I feel like I gotta go to church right now. I had three jobs in college.
But see, this is honestly, and it's what I want to get to the point at when I interview people, because you're like, you are such a good example of success happening, but it's in a way that I think Lucille Ball had a great quote, and it was, I think luck doesn't really exist. I don't trust people who believe in luck, because really it's hard work and knowing when an opportunity is right to take or not.
Absolutely.
And I always thought that was such a good way of looking at it, especially from someone like her, who obviously her career was so long standing. But I think that there's something to be said for that, because we see so many examples of these flash in the pan stars, of these American Idol-esque rises to the top, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so then it almost, I feel like it creates this new generation of people who don't realize, oh, I might actually have to work three jobs while I'm in acting school in New York.
Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? Might actually have to be a series regular on a show and still be a server on the weekends. I did that for 2 years.
What was that?
People would come in the restaurant and I'd be like, oh, would you like more water? And they'd look up and they're like, wait, aren't you that guy from that? I'm like, yes, would you like more water? You know what I mean?
Wow.
But no, I worked three jobs during college, man. I fell asleep during acting class all the time. I had a couple, you know, instructors that were like, you don't take this seriously. You're just, you know, sleeping and yada, yada, yada. And I was like, look, I'm getting 4.5 hours of sleep a night. Things had gotten kind of crazy because, you know, my mom got really sick. Right when I moved up to New York, and you know, we had to combine our resources, let's just say. And so, you know, two restaurant jobs, and you know, I worked, you know, a catering job as well, worked at a, you know, jazz club part of the time, and then you know, this French Belgian restaurant as well, and
damn,
did catering jobs and stuff on the side. You know, I'd go from one job to the next and next. One day off every 3 weeks, which was a Monday, I do. But I would not give up that experience for the world, because it really taught me how to, well, first of all, appreciate what I have, but also how to maintain what I had at the same time. You know what I'm saying? A lot of times people get blessings, they get blessed, and they just hold that blessing for themselves instead of trying to multiply that blessing. You know what I mean?
Gotcha, yeah.
You don't appreciate the value of a dollar until you've had to, like, sweat for one. Somebody keeps giving it to you, you're just going to think that it comes out of nowhere and that you begin to expect it.
Yeah.
And I always just tell people, man, like, don't believe your own hype, because, like, as soon as you do...
I think it's that perspective that you were talking about, almost, that from our hometown, from other hometowns.
It's like you have to be hyper-focused once you do get the blessings, because there's negativity and stuff all around you that's going to constantly try to knock you off your game. And if you keep that focus, you keep them blinders on, it makes it that much better, and you move forward that much faster. You know what I'm saying? Like, I always tell people, like, don't believe your own hype. The moment you stop learning is the moment that you should just be gone from this earth, honestly. That's how I feel. If I'm not learning anything, if I'm not growing anymore, I don't want to be here anymore.
Yeah.
That's the purpose of us being here.
I think that's really important for a lot of people to hear, though, because I think, especially in towns like LA, you know, mm-hmm. it's an industry town. It's been an industry town. And I think the perspective so often is that getting to LA or New York or Chicago is, oh, I've won the race. Mm-mm. When really it is
it just started.
A whole new race. Exactly. It is the start of a brand new race. Cause,
like, it's a marathon. And,
but
not
that,
a sprint.
That I want to actually ask you about, because I feel like that must be really interesting, because you just got off of Jumanji. This is not breaking any NDAs or anything. The announcement has been made. So you are one of the stars of the new Jumanji film with my future second husband, Dwayne The Rock Johnson. don't worry. Steven knows. It's all right. But to go from that, you know, and obviously, like, we're friends on Instagram and stuff, so I, like, see, you know, pictures of you in the makeup chair or something like that, or, you mm-hmm. know, pictures on set or whatever. And I, having done the minimal, you know, background acting that I've done, but also when I've been on set for months at a time or whatever, do you ever have moments where you kind of have to laugh because you're, like, sitting at a table with an overflowing box of any food you could want, and you've got beverages and desserts and snacks all day long, and then you'll walk by and hear some old grip guy who's been in it for 50 years say something like, "Ugh, lasagna again? I can't believe we gotta eat." And every time I'm always like, I don't care who you are, but if I hear you complain about food or anything like that on set, I will tell you that you're being inappropriate and mm-hmm. you're being so, like, because it's a weird kind of, we're like the only industry that gets, like, fed and, you know, all these, like, little perks.
Yeah,
but
no,
then also there's so the other side of it where it's like you could be fucking, like,
it's definitely okay.
Just your enemy,
I have,
you know,
two
what I mean?
Perspectives on this. It's definitely a silver spoon fed industry once you're doing it.
Right.
If you're lucky enough to do it.
Right.
That's a big if.
Because there's so many
almost cussed. It's a big if.
Yeah.
I have friends who've lived here for 10 years and are still trying to get, like, their first or second guest star and stuff like that. So, like, it's all, you got to put it all in perspective. So, yeah, I think in grand scheme of things, like, we're not, you know, saving the world or anything like that. You know, Denzel had a quote the other day.
Yeah, the Hollywood Reporter thing.
Yeah, the Hollywood Reporter roundtable. He was like, no, send your kid off to war. Like, that's hard. Making movies is not hard. Making TV is not hard. It's a privilege. It's absolutely a privilege. In the grand scheme of things, though, we all have our own crosses to bear. We can't compare ourselves to the next man either. You know what I'm saying? Like, okay, my family doesn't have to deal with, you know, maybe starvation and stuff like that. You have your own set of problems, sure. But grand scheme of things, I mean, we're extremely lucky. And I hear anybody complain on set. I remember 3 days ago, I was sitting in the makeup chair getting ready to go on for this incredible scene that's, like, crazy lit, and we're in this really cool set. I can't say anything. I keep trying to, like, pull
NDAs,
it back.
Off mic. Tell me off mic.
But I'm sitting in the chair, and I got annoyed with one of the PAs because he was, like, rushing me along throughout the process, through the works, we call them the works. So, like, hair, makeup, wardrobe, blah, 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 get ready to go to set.
100-100 is...
Yeah. And so I was getting annoyed because I was like, man, I never get to eat my breakfast in the morning. Every time I come here, like, you order me breakfast and I don't get to eat it because you push me through everything so quickly, blah, blah, blah. And I have, like, I treat every day I go to set like game day. It's like, for me, you know, again, growing up as an athlete, like, I have my game day routine. You're not letting me do my routine. I got annoyed. And I just thought about it as I was, like, standing on set. I was standing on my mark, you know, with these $80,000 cameras pointed at me. And I was like, you know what? I should not complain about anything right now.
Like,
screw my breakfast. I'm going to have, like, 5 breaks while they're setting up cameras. I can eat and have someone go get it for me.
Right.
You know what I mean? I had that option, that luxury. Man, talk about a blessing. That put things in perspective for me. Every time I book a job and then I wake up and, you know, get a nice car to pick me up to take me to the airport, they treat you like a king. But in the grand scheme of things, man, we're so blessed, so privileged to be able to do what we do.
Yeah.
So privileged. I'm in a movie with The Rock, with Kevin Hart, with Karen Gillan, Jack Black, Nick Jonas. Like,
God.
The list goes on. And then we have, like, a new crop of incredible. She, oh my gosh. You almost peed yourself talking about Nick Jonas. Jesus.
No, Jack Black.
Jack Black. Oh.
That was not a Nick Jonas.
It wasn't.
This
oh,
is a
I'm
Jack
sorry.
Black
my bad.
Me, okay.
Jack Black is the nicest human being I've ever met in my life. There, I said it.
I was
I'm on record.
Just, I'm trying to not ask on questions
record.
That I know
literally
will make you break contracts
nicest guy.
And stuff. But.
But again, it's just an incredible journey that we're on. And at the end of the day, you know, always keep in mind that somebody else has got it worse than you. And I don't ever lose sight of that. Keep my nose to the grind, you know.
But I think that also, that keeps you, that perspective seems so well-rounded. And the only thing I can think of when you're saying this is your mom must be so proud of you. Because, like, you have success in the terms of, you know, what you've wanted to achieve, you're achieving it, right? And so even if there wasn't the Footloose,
just getting
even
started,
if there wasn't
yeah.
the Jumanji, even yeah. if there wasn't these amazing things, mm-hmm. even if I didn't drive down Sunset and see you on a billboard a couple of years ago, you know? Like, even if those things didn't happen, yeah. I feel like the perspective that you have is so well-rounded that I'm very excited to see what the next 5+ years are going to hold for you, because I feel like this is really just the tip, and yeah. to be able to...
Just a tip.
to be able to just, like, you know, keep growing but still keep that attitude, yeah. I think is really important, especially for I don't know, with like YouTube and internet celebrities and the way people become famous. It's a very hard thing because now that I'm moving, mm-hmm. can I tell you, somebody actually said the words to me, but what about your dreams, as if they were only somehow contained to like the city limits
yeah.
of Los Angeles
no.
or something
well,
like
these
that.
Days though. Communication and technology has linked us all throughout the world. Yeah. I mean, you're finding some of the most incredible performers just via Instagram and YouTube.
Do you
and,
ever do those for your auditions, like those digital ones where you can sort of submit online and you could...
Self-tape?
Well, yeah, but like it's like... it's self-taping, but it's like, I guess it's like there's agencies that... deal with it, and so you could theoretically be getting roles from other countries and stuff. Is that something that's happening?
Oh,
now, I
don't know anything about that. You need to tell me about that.
Somebody was telling me, it was like a filmmaker friend was telling me that they found their lead, or maybe it was one of the roundtables or something, and they found their lead through.
We got to talk about that when we're done with this for sure. But
what's the difference between like a self-tape audition and being in the room for you?
It's a huge difference, night and day. I used to hate self-taping before I learned how to do it properly. There's advantages and disadvantages. So the advantage of self-taping is that you can do it 30 times and perfect it the way that you want it to be. So that's the good thing. You can like edit it together, make it look all nice and smooth. But that's also the downside. It's the way that you want it to be. So there's no opportunity for them to give you any notes. There's no opportunity for them to give you an adjustment like when I walk into the room. Also, the advantage of walking into the room is, hey, here's 10 seconds of my personality while you get the camera set up, you know?
Right.
So you get an opportunity. You know, a lot of times people don't want to work with people that they don't like. They want to work with somebody that they think, hey, you know, maybe we could grab a bite after set or something like that.
Right.
Or, you know, go grab a beer or hang out on the weekend, blah, blah, blah. So it's multi- faceted. Like, they want the most talented, cool person. That's what they want. They're not necessarily just the most talented person or just the coolest person.
Right.
They want, it's about building relationships. So that's kind of the disadvantage of not being able to go into the room.
Yeah.
But I mean, I booked plenty of work off self-tape. I booked Jumanji off of tape.
Really?
Know? Yeah.
That's incredible, actually.
Yeah, I booked a lot of my work off tape. But again, technology is great because you know, I've had Skype sessions with producers in New York while I'm in LA, and I've had auditions in that way too. So mm-hmm. like the gap is being closed a little bit when it comes, not a little bit, a lot, as opposed to like back in the day when people had to have like a call service and stuff to take their messages to get auditions and pagers and yada, yada, yada. And have to, you know, run across town to print this out and yada, yada, yada. So it's just different now. It's digital.
Yeah.
I haven't printed out headshots in probably over a year. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's very different. But it's making it a lot easier to find talent and opportunities as well. You can do it from wherever you live.
Yeah.
No matter, you can live in Indiana and send in for a project like Jumanji.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. So
Did you do that great. Through, like, what is it, Actors Access?
Actors Access is where I started. That's where I got, like, my first, like, paid gig was mm-hmm. through Actors Access
and then
LA Casting, New York Casting, Casting Networks, cool. you know. There's so many other ones now where you can find, you know, these up-and-coming filmmakers and stuff, or not even up-and-coming, sometimes just established filmmakers who have incredible projects. And there's so many more avenues now too between the Hulus, the Netflixes, the Amazons, et cetera. So
Golden Globe noms for Best Actress and 4 out of the 5 are Netflix shows.
Oh wow!
Literally, it's like
yep.
no joke. And yep. I'm just that's where it's going.
They're the best right now.
You also did. Hey a Netflix, star
give me a job.
Though.
Thanks. Bye. Huh?
You did a star show.
Hey Netflix, give me a job. Thanks. Bye. Sorry.
Oh, we'll use both of them. We can do it I'm three sure. times if you want. Like.
Hey Netflix, this is Sir'Darius Blaine. Give me a jab. Give me a jab.
Netflix is actually the number yeah. one listener of this podcast. So
really?
They're definitely.
Hey, boo.
I was actually, I was talking to a friend, and I think that, I don't know if we would have ever imagined that I almost feel like I enjoy TV more than movies now because of what they're able to kind of do and mm-hmm. how you can kind of just make it like a 10, like I just watched the entire Netflix, The Crown, mm-hmm. in like the past 3 days because I've just mm-hmm. been packing. Mm-hmm. Watching The yeah. Crown, and I watched like 10 hours.
We're in a of we're in a drama. We're in a golden era of TV right now. This is the best TV has ever been, so, but it's also very saturated though. There's a lot of TV and different types of TV to watch.
Does that make it difficult for you as an actor because you worked? You did a show called Survivor's Remorse on Starz. You
right.
were one of the recurring characters on that. What was your mm-hmm. character's name?
Jupiter Black Mon, Mon with an M O N.
So M O N like.
Black Mind. Yeah.
What was it like working for a network like them, though? Because they are similar to, like, an HBO or something like that, where they have, like, a little bit more freedom in terms of scripting. Like, did it feel different compared to other TV that you've done?
That was the first... you know what? That was the first cable show that I've done. Yeah, it was the first cable show that I've done. It did feel a little bit different. I can't really give you a gauge on that show because it's a little different. The showrunner on that show is also the head writer.
Oh, okay.
He's the EP.
So it's very tight.
Yeah. So he, you know, he has a good hand on everything, the inner workings of the show. So it's a little bit different because, you know, he knows exactly how he wants it to go.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you go in there, you execute your job, and you go home, you know. Okay. So it's a little different from, like, some other maybe network shows that I've done. Or
the ABC Family show that you did?
Yeah, that was, I mean, it was a little bit looser. But when you're talking about network shows, network, I mean, I still consider Starz a network show. It's a network channel, you know.
Yeah.
Because you've got so many different levels of creatives and executives that have a say
yeah.
in what happens with the show. So a lot of times producers or writers or whatever, or directors will feel a lot of pressure to perform because it's all about Nielsen ratings, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's not that freededom like you would have on maybe like a Sundance TV or a History Channel show
right.
or an AMC show. Where they still have execs and stuff, but it's a little bit looser because they're coming from more of an indie perspective.
Right.
Where they're hoping to, like, just, hey, look, let's collaborate on some art and hope that it's great. They're not so dependent on ratings.
Right.
And so they're able to kind of, everyone's a little bit more relaxed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And this is not a knock on network shows, obviously. I'm just saying it's completely different
it's
world.
A completely different
and then when it comes to movies, you know, movies is different too because, you know, you have defined beginning, middle, and end. You know exactly. You know exactly what to expect from the story and stuff. So it's less. There's less pressure in terms of, like, you know, I don't know. There's less pressure in terms of, like, trying to create an amazing story because the story is already set.
Right.
With TV, it's like open ended. You know. Got a contract for 7 years. Let's see where this character goes. Let's see where the story goes. And, you know, so I feel like they have a lot more, you know, pressure. Like people like Shonda Rhimes and stuff, they're constantly
yeah.
churning out really great product. But I'm sure there's a tremendous amount of pressure for them to constantly succeed as well. So
I imagine, too, as an actor, you must wonder if you're going to have a role for that long. Like if you play something one way, but you don't know that character's future and then something in their future contradicts the way that you've played them before. Like, I could see that being a thing where you're like constantly needing to know, and that makes sense to me, and I actually have never thought about it
that way. That's just being constantly in contact with the writers and stuff, and allowing them to know who you are and what your talents are, so that they tend to incorporate, you know, aspects of your personality into your character and allow the character to grow with you as you grow, you know.
So do you have a dream person you'd want to work with for TV or movie? Shonda Rhimes, obviously, I think is everybody's dream, because I did do an episode of Scandal, and Kerry Washington is like, she looks that pretty in person. So like, how does she look that pretty in person?
Quite
like,
a few times.
Yeah, she was so nice to the crew, and she was very sweet.
She's an angel.
She was one of those people that every time she smiled, I almost could hear it. You know, I could, like, feel that she was smiling, because she's just so bright, you know? And just, but do you have anybody you'd want to really work with, or any filmmakers that you
Everybody. God, I have, my list is too long. I'm going to leave people out. But definitely Shonda Rhimes, definitely Ryan Murphy, definitely anybody at HBO. Just anybody. Hi, Mark Wahlberg. Hi, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, who... We just did a movie together. What's up with Ballers? Let me know.
He seems like the nicest guy ever. Yeah. The Rock.
Oh, he is. He is. He's great. He's a hard worker.
I know this about my future husband. He's going to be really nice.
Anyway. But no, there's plenty of producers and writers and stuff. You know, Soderbergh's one of my favorites. The man is, you know, a poet. Wait till you see some of the stuff that they did in Jumanji. Like, some of the stuff that they built and created. I wish I could talk to you about it right now. But it's amazing. So I mean, there's artists on from every perspective of this business. It's insane that, like, many of the true creatives lie behind the camera, to be honest with you. Those are the creative people. I mean, we get to go out there and act it out and have fun and be silly and get the recognition. But you've got set dressers that are completely, you know, transforming... you know, these empty shells into an entire new universe. I remember when I did Star Trek Into Darkness years ago, we shot in an old aircraft carrier that they created a planet on.
Yeah.
It's the biggest green screen I've ever seen. It was like 3 football fields.
Oh my God.
And they created an entire planet, Kronos, out of styrofoam and like little pieces of wood. I'm like, how the heck did you do this? Most incredible creative people ever.
I heard working with J.J. Abrams is great.
J.J. Abrams is my favorite director that I've ever worked with. The dude is so collaborative. Jake Kasdan is up there too, though, who just directed Jumanji. But
his dad is a director as well. So
his
I
dad
think
is
he,
incredible. I mean, Empire Strikes Back all this great stuff that he's created. But
so cool though.
Yeah, but I mean, JJ was the most collaborative, nicest, friendliest guy. You wouldn't even know that you're walking around a $150 million movie set.
He's
a giving man.
Nerd,
he will never
you know?
Go hungry because he gives everybody an opportunity around him, and he trusts their abilities, man. Everybody loves him, from his DP, Dan Mendel, and everybody. He just trusts you to do your job, and he's not going to micromanage you, even though there's $150 million on the line.
Yeah,
you know?
That's awesome.
That's how I would want to run my ship.
Yeah. Well, speaking of
my
you
ship,
actually,
did you hear that?
That
my ship.
One.
Okay, sorry.
I was gonna say you started doing your own productions as well. You've started doing some sketches and different, like short kind of. Most of them are comedy, right? Like for the most part.
Right.
And is there a channel that you want to direct people to, or is it just all individual stuff that you're like?
Oh, it's individual stuff. I mean, I do a lot of my stuff on Facebook, just because I actually prefer Facebook to anything. But I put my stuff on YouTube and stuff as well. It's gonna be. I have a whole bunch of projects in queue right now. I'm just kind of waiting for the right moment to let them go. I'm trying to be strategic about releasing them, but
Are you directing them, or are you writing them?
I've written them, directed them, and I act in them. But that's just, it's a means to familiarize people with my voice more than anything. And then release, like, the projects that I'm really, really, like, in the lab working on. I've got a couple things cooking. I got a couple features that I've written. I wrote 2 features, and I just started a third with my partner, Brandon Myers, who's an incredible writer, incredible mind, and incredible talent. And so my genre, I guess, I lean more towards coming of age indie dramas, you know, about the human condition, stories that paint a picture of what our world actually looks like and what certain individuals' worlds look like and what they have to overcome in order to get where they want to go in life. And so those are the projects that I'm writing right now. I've got a series that I'm about to start pitching. It's a Demon Hunter show. It's
this
college basketball player who finds out that he's got powers and is a demon hunter and needs to save New Orleans from tyranny and
I
evil.
Watched the hell out of that show. That's like Buffy 2.0 or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, so it's like Blade meets Supernatural. That's what it's
like.
I like that you're not wanting
to say Buffy because you don't want to add a cheerleader.
No, I like Buffy. I was going to say Buffy, but this one's a little got a little more edge to it, though, you
and
know?
And I think Supernatural, too, is more, because isn't it multiple? It's not just like one.
It's different types of demons and stuff that they have to fight, and
that's
exactly why. Yeah.
So is it a comedy or drama?
It's a drama with comedic moments. Okay. You know, it's real life. That's what it is. You know, real life is drama, and you laugh sometimes. Yeah. You know, so that's what it is. But yeah, working on that, and got a couple other projects in queue. But yeah, writing is where my heart is. Producing, and that's ultimately what I'm going to be transitioning into. I love acting as well, of course, but
yeah.
Most people don't know that actors are actually kind of like bottom of the totem pole in the hierarchy of the film business and TV. And so, you know, being a producer, being a writer, you're able to provide opportunities for people. You're able to teach a man how to fish. And so that's where I want to be. I want to be in a place where I can provide opportunities for people I care about. And so that's why I want to focus on that more.
That's like such the dream. I think when I think of the career trajectories that I want like a Judd Apatow, but not in the genre or even anything other than he just gets to go to work with his friends all the time. And that's all I want to do.
Yes.
And that's part of it with the studio. I'm going to Michigan. I'm already, we've lined up, we have 14 projects in pre-production right now that are just all varying degrees, obviously, because some of them are, you know, scripts or outlines or whatever, but I'm just like lining some stuff up. And every time I'm like texting a friend and they're like, yeah, I'm down.
Give me a job, Virginia.
Yes. That would be the biggest goal, though, is to be able to hire you. Like, that anytime I am able to actually pay friends for a gig, it's like, it's a win. Yeah. But I will kind of wrap it, we'll like slowly start wrapping it down, but I have a question that I like to ask everybody, because the long-form title of Super Hungry, the podcast, is Super Hungry, Conversations with Not-So-Starving Artists.
Mm.
So
I love that.
Thank you. Really, what I like to do is... I like to examine and ask, and it's kind of a personal question, but I hope that you'll be open to answering it. Was there a moment really in acting, in building your career, where you kind of, it was too hard, it was too much, like, this is, I'm just done, I'm not going to do it.
Yo.
And then, like, what was it that pulled you back, you know?
I have that moment, like, every 3 weeks. What do you mean? This is the hardest thing I've ever tried to do.
Yeah.
And I didn't have to do it.
Yeah.
I could have chose to stay in school and...
Been a cardiologist
because, you know, 1 + 1 = 2 in that line of work.
Right.
This is not that.
Yeah.
Sometimes 10 + 10 can equal -10. You know, you're going to be met with moments of self-doubt in this business because it's an exterior, you know... Some would say superficial, but tangible business where you walk into a room and sometimes I'm too tall.
Right.
Or sometimes I'm too big. Sometimes I'm too small. Sometimes I'm not attractive enough. Sometimes I'm too attractive.
Right.
So it's all these things that are constantly running around in your head. So you never know why you don't get a job. You never know why that director brought you in 9 times. This has literally happened to me before. 9 times for his feature, and you find out through the internet that somebody else got it, kind of thing. You know, stuff like that happens all the time. So it's like kind of soul crushing at times, especially when you're like tight on cash and LA is very expensive.
Yes.
And so, you know, I have a son as well. I have a 2.5-year-old baby boy.
So thank you.
I have to feed him as well, too.
Yeah.
So like I was okay myself eating ramen noodles for a year while I struggle and blah, blah, blah. But he's got things that he needs, too. And, you know, my mom as well. You know, I want to give her a good life, you know, for the rest of her life. And I want to own things and blah, blah, blah. And acting can be so inconsistent. It's a roller coaster ride, and you got to be ready to buckle up and hold on, you know? And it's about holding on. It's about having faith, maintaining your faith in order to get where you want. So I take a break every year. When I start feeling like that and the pressure's too much, I'm like, you know what? I need to refresh. I need to reset. And I take like a month long, you know, staycation away from acting, and I tell my agents and managers that don't send me anything unless it's like dire straits. If J.J. Abrams calls, of course I'm in. But for now, like, just don't. I don't want to audition. I don't want to do anything. I need to like clear my energy. I need to clear my spirit out and just like refresh myself with positivity.
Yeah.
And that's what happens, is you start letting that little self doubt, little inch get in there, and it starts chipping away at you. And all this self doubt creeps in, and you start only being able to see every negative thing about yourself instead of seeing the beautiful promise that God has put inside you,
right.
The beautiful gifts that He's put inside of you, the way that you make people feel when you're happy. All of those things start to get lost because you're so focused on your shortcomings. But end of the day, it takes heat and pressure to make a diamond. You know what I'm saying? So if you can stand the heat, you'll be able to have, you know, those edges trimmed off and shined up, and before you know it, you'll be where you want to be. But you just got to stick to it, you know, stick with it. And lots of prayer, lots of meditation, and lots of positive energy from people that truly care about me.
Yeah.
Those are the things that help me to keep going, you know.
That's such a good, that's such a good piece of advice for people, but it also is such a good reminder to just sort of, like, take a breath and, wherever it is, whatever you're doing, like, you're alive.
Yeah. And enjoying small victories, like stopping and smelling the roses. And like, you know what? I made an accomplishment.
Yeah.
I'm not where I want to be yet, but I put one more foot in front of the other already.
Yeah. You are a better version of yourself today than you were the day before.
Exactly.
I think that's really great.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. Well, that's a good place to end, I think. And I always laugh because I never have. I always feel like those awkward radio DJs, you know, like Crazy Ira and the Douche or whatever. They have like, you know, like a sign off or something.
Right.
And I don't have one. And so it's been funny because when Tom Wilson was on, he was like, well, we could just cut it to static. And I made a joke quick while we were still on mic. I was like, I don't know if I can afford that Foley. And he goes, I'll do it for you. And he literally just goes into the microphone. And it was just the funniest end ever. So you could give me static, or if you just wanted to do a bumper.
You're listening to Super Hungry, the podcast with my beautiful friend Virginia right now. She's doing big things. I am Sir Darius Blaine, and I am honored to be here. I'm really sad to see you go to Michigan, but go ahead and take over that city so I can come and reap the benefits and pick up the pieces.
Yes.